Sangha is invited to go back to our breathing so that our collective energy of mindfulness will bring us together as an organism, going as a river, with no more separation. Let the whole Sangha breathe as one body, generate peace as one body, be free as one body. Let us transcend the boundaries of an elusive self, liberating from the superiority complex, the inferiority complex, and the equality complex.
So this is our third and final day of this three-day October 2010 retreat here in Tampa, in which we've begun to explore the Buddhist teaching on be an island unto oneself, be a refuge unto oneself, the Dharma is our island, and the Dharma is our refuge. So where should we be by now? We should have gotten it clearly that as an island unto ourself, it's my island. That is a maturity. It is something that many of us resist deep into our old age. Remember, Ananda said to Buddha, must be more teaching, please help us, give us more. Buddha said, I've given you everything. You need to practice it, Ananda. I can't do it for you. You are the cause of your own suffering. You are the cause of your own liberation. We don't... That's a hard one for us to hear. Because we want to hold... we either want some force outside of ourselves to do the job. And again, there are many teachings and religions out there which will do that for you. Right? Just surrender, turn it over, and we will save you. But that's not what the Buddha taught. So, and especially in the Zen meditative tradition, so this is not for everyone, is it? And that's sort of, be an island unto yourself, be a refuge unto yourself. That's kind of, that's a door that maybe many people may not want to walk through. Right. That is a high bar. The volume on what? Maybe it's a problem with me. Is it better now? Maybe I just need to put this up or... How's that? Okay. Yeah, so be an island unto yourself is a challenge, right? And when many of us realize that that's the challenge that the Buddha sets before us, if we want to follow his path, many people will move on to the next restaurant up the road. And that's fine. That's why there are many restaurants. Right? Again, the Buddha says clearly, I cannot save you, I cannot wash away your stains, I cannot go inside your mind and transmit my liberation to you, my understanding to you. All I can do is show you the way, guide you and support you, but you have to do it yourself. You are an island unto yourself. So that's the first challenge. A second challenge is we've got nobody to blame. I'm not what I am today. I cannot hold my family of origin responsible for it. I cannot hold my society for it. I cannot hold my job for it. I cannot hold my relationships for it. I mean, that's all outside. It's how we responded to things. We dealt with things. We understood things. We reacted to things that have created the mental formations within ourselves that we're living from. Right? This is our island. And everything at this point that's on it, wherever it came from, right? We've got to deal with. There may be things in my garden that blew in from a neighbor's. Seeds and plants, you know what I mean? Birds brought things, what do I do? Still, they're there in my garden. And however they got there, it is my job to deal with them. Nobody makes you suffer but yourself. Nobody makes you unhappy but yourself. Nobody makes you scared but yourself. Nobody makes you angry but yourself. It doesn't come from outside. There is the world of phenomena. And that just is. But everything that arises within us is from how we are perceiving, relating, viewing, interacting with that phenomena. And that's simply the truth about what it's like to be an island unto oneself and to take responsibility for that island. Now, some people may hear that and be overwhelmed by that, be distraught by that, right? Be kind of angry that I'm even saying that. Because many of us may have an alternative story about who's responsible for our suffering, our pain. We have lots of narrative stories that we run in our heads and we believe, all self-created. Right? So we may get upset when we hear that. But other people may be happy. You know. Right? Because those you who believe that the cause of your suffering is outside you, you live in an unmanageable world. Where you're endlessly trying to control the world outside you. Right? Endlessly. Trying to make everything perfect, make everything stable, permanent, make everyone love you, be a success at everything you do, you know what I mean? Look for others or things to make you happy, safe, secure. It's a lot of work. And it's ultimately unsuccessful and unsatisfactory. So when you hear, it's all inside you. It's your own mental formations, your own thoughts, your own perceptions that are causing you suffering. Many of you may, rather than being upset at that, may be very happy. Oh, well, this is doable. Right? This is a piece of cake. It's all right here. And if I can learn to be understanding, compassionate, wise, intelligent, with my own mental formations, or the own actions of my body, speech, and mind, I can be happy in this life. I can be stable in this life. I can be grounded in this life. I can be peaceful in this life. Be a refuge unto yourself. But you have to make yourself something worthy of being taken refuge in. That's why the Buddha says, make Dharma your refuge. Now again, when he says make Dharma your refuge, he's not selling anything. Right? The Buddha, he didn't have a piece of the action, the Dharma action. He wasn't getting a commission, he wasn't getting a cut, it wasn't a Ponzi scheme, it wasn't a, one of those pyramid, the Buddha Dharma it's not a pyramid thing. Everybody's getting a cut. Person at the top makes the most. Buddha, he was a homeless one, didn't he? He left the palace. He left that life behind, didn't he? He left all the things behind. He had nothing. He had his bowl. And he didn't even have any food stores. Every day he went out. Right? Every day he once again lived his faith. So when he said, make Dharma your refuge, he said, make the way of understanding and love your refuge. Right? Make mindfulness your refuge. Make concentration insight, compassion, understanding, patience, the six paramitas, the Eightfold Path, right? Make your true nature, your Buddha nature, your refuge. And then you'll have an island you're happy on. You're happy to stay on. So he left us the instructions about our, he told us, you know, which island was ours, and then he left complete decorating instructions. Right? He left the manual, he left the paint, he left the brushes, he left the wallpaper, you know. He left the seeds, he left the seedlings, he left the shovel, the hoe, right? He left everything. And there we are, looking at it all. You know? That's not going to beautify our island, is it? Got to pick up the paintbrush. Got to paint some walls. Plant some seeds. Tend your garden. Then you'll have an island worthy of Buddha Dharma, worthy of yourself, worthy of your aspiration. But you know, that's many of us. You know, we're Buddhist, right? Here's my island, and over there's the paint. You know what I mean? You know, we show everything, but nothing's been put together. Nothing's been taken care of. We need to practice if we want to live on the island of Dharma. Is that clear? I mean, does anybody not get that? I don't say that in a challenge. I'm serious. Because I would love all of us to walk away from this retreat clear, committed to their island, no longer blaming outside themselves for their suffering, and knowing they have the tools to transform, heal and transform themselves. No need for excuses, rationalizations, defensive statements. It's all very clear. The Buddha said to Ananda, yeah, our good friend Shariputra is gone. But he was always going to go. How lucky we were to have him around as long as we did. No gnashing of teeth, no great drama. Just acknowledgement. He was our dear friend, a good man. It was wonderful to have him. And now he's gone. Like all of us will be, like I will be. Isn't that the truth? Simple, unadorned. In this world, there are comings and goings. If you have an island that you are at home on, stable on, grounded on, you will not be overly disturbed by the comings and goings around you. But if you are not comfortable on your island of self, if it is a lonely place, if it is a sad place, if it is an empty place, if it is a boring place, you'll never get it. You'll always be seeking outside, attaching, grasping, manipulating, controlling. There's no end to that. Each of us has a true nature, like the sky this morning, right? Empty and pure, unstained. Each of us is connected to everything. Each of us is everything, just like the island that is connected to the earth. That's not a simile, that's not a metaphor, that's not a symbol, that's not a metaphysical, that's the truth. But we will never know that. We will never experience that if we do not look in between and deeper than the thoughts to see the nature of our own minds. It's right here. Often when we look out in the immensity of the night, or moments in nature, wonderful music, other types of moments, when the smallness of self drops away, we know that. We know that truth. I am more than my little self. I am more than my worries, my fears, my resentments, my needs, my wants, my dramas, my stories. We are much more than that. And when you experience that, then you know that there is no coming and going. Things are just appearing and disappearing, all within something that can contain all that. Do you miss your last breath? Anybody here mourning their last breath? No, why? Because another breath immediately came. We know that, don't we? So most of us are not having chronic anxiety with every breath. Think about how that would be. We have no control over our breathing, do we? All of us, all of the cells here, your body's just breathing, isn't it? Your heart's just pumping. You have absolutely no control over any of it. And it could stop at any time it wants to. According to causes and conditions. The whole thing's out of control. And yet what? We're okay with that, don't we? We seem to accept that peace. Wouldn't it be nice if we lived our life with that same sense? I don't need to worry about the next breath. I don't need to mourn the last breath. I can just enjoy what's the breath that is occurring now. But if we're always thinking about the last breath and worrying about the next breath, we'll never enjoy the breath that is here. if we're always on focus, what was, and worrying about and wondering about what's next, we'll never have the capacity to enjoy what's right here. And there's always something here. That is a given. Awareness just keeps unfolding. It never disappears. You can be aware you're happy, you can be aware you're sad, you can be aware things are good, you can be aware that things are bad, you know, whatever. Awareness doesn't change. Beyond birth and death is right now. So again, even though this has been a short retreat, I think the Buddha's teachings have been very direct and simple and open and honest. So we leave here knowing about being an island unto oneself. We leave here knowing about the Dharma being the island. Not a conceptual, philosophical dharma, but a living dharma. Mindfulness, something that's alive within us, that we bring to everything. Right? Loving kindness, compassion is alive within us, and we bring it to everything. Acceptance, letting go. Right? These are what we live from. And there's only one way to get good at it. Just got to keep practicing. Practice, practice, practice until it becomes normal. It becomes you. We all have personal work, whatever. We all have had that experience of learning, you know, learning curve, learning. And at a point, something that we had to learn is just normative. Right? It's part of us. In the same way, we need to embrace Dharma and practice it so it just becomes our default. It's where we go when something. You hear the voice inside you. Everything changes. Let go. What are you holding on to? Just let go. Why are you causing yourself suffering? Just let go. What are you attached to? See their point of view. Are they suffering? Let go. Right? Those little voices will always be there to correct. Correct you when you start walking off the path or you're suffering. Right? You won't have to wander so far away, and you won't have to struggle so hard to get back, because the voice will be right there. The voice of your own Dharma nature. I think there are some people here who probably have that voice already inside them, but they may not listen to it. Like somebody was saying, we know better. And the reason we don't listen to that voice is because we have not taken refuge in Dharma. Let's stop kidding around. We can say the words day and night, but we haven't done it. Because that's not where we're going when we are suffering, when we are angry, when we're hurt. We're not going to the Dharma because we haven't taken refuge. We're still going to the world. We're going to ego. We're going to our stories. There's a saying where they say, you know, once you've taken refuge, do not take refuge in non-dharmic paths. Now, that doesn't mean like, you know, stay away from anything that doesn't have the Buddhist label on it. It means, you know, don't go to paths that don't promote liberation. The path of ego, the path of self-centeredness, the path of me and mine does not promote liberation. It is a non-dharmic path. The Buddha did not teach take refuge in the I and mine. The Buddha also didn't teach, you know, I mean, some people go, well, that's, you know, that's where I was brought up, that's the lessons I got from, you know, we're adults, right? If those lessons and examples that we learned from our elders, we know are not conducive to goodness, right? To happiness, to openness, then don't listen to those voices. A non-dharmic path. Right. So at some point we need to get very clear about how we want to live this life. When you're clear, then everything is easy. When you're not clear, things are a little messy. You're on, you're off. You do, you don't. You should, you shouldn't. Right. Teacher once said, in our practice of Dharma, we should be impeccable, like that. No regrets. So we've learned about what it means to be an island unto oneself and the implications of that. We've learned about Dharma as refuge, Dharma as island. And then we've also heard directly from the Buddha about things such as four foundations of mindfulness as the foundation of our daily life practice. Right. Mindfulness, concentration. And then we've also heard about looking deeply. To go to the heart of things, go to the source of things, go to the origin. You know, if you are suffering and you want to be free of your suffering, if you want to be delivered, remember? If you want to be delivered, right? Go to the causation, go to the source, go to the origin, go to the heart of the matter. It's a type of investigation, introspection that we're all capable of. None of us are incapable of it. Please do not make the practice of Buddha Dharma too complicated, too complex. It's really quite simple. Stop, look, and listen. that about stop signs? Who said that? Stop looking. Roll request. Stop looking. Listen. Yeah. Is there anything in terms of the teachings that the Buddha has taught us in these last couple of days that's not clear? Either in our capacity to really understand what's being said, or how to practice, or anybody who thinks that they're dealing with obstacles or challenges that prevent them from doing what's been discussed. Yes.
From what I understand from what you've been saying, using an example to say, I'm thinking about such and such, which is disturbing.
And so I'm thinking about something, and when I think about that, emotions.
Emotional disturbance.
Okay.
So I can, you know, like one simple little thing I can do is say, okay, stop it. Look at something. Look at that flower. Look how beautiful it is. Think about the flower. Get some sort of and quiet down that sensation. And I think I'm interpreting the idea of the island unto yourself, you know, to be able to do that for yourself. Where is the island unto yourself? Where does it meet with desires and the issue of the wisdom to know the difference between the two? Like where, what advice does the Buddha give in terms of the serenity prayer?
Yeah.
Like, so, okay, my island, I can make it such that from the time I open my eyes in the morning to the time I close them at night, if I do X, Y, and Z, I can concentrate on things that are pleasant and nice and so forth. And that's great. So the island looks fine. But there are things that I'm aware of that could enhance life. When do you make efforts?
Your life.
My life.
Yeah.
When do I make efforts to put energy into seeking those enhancements? And when do I say, I don't have it, so just look at the beautiful flower that makes you feel good, leave well enough alone.
Yeah, I mean, that's, again, and that's a good point, because, again, so the question is, I think what you're asking, you're saying, just on a kind of not a very active life, just kind of a daily life, kind of moving through things as they are, you're saying, I can see how, when certain things arrive that is disturbing, I just kind of loosen my... focus on that and go to something else that is more calming or whatever you're saying. So in generally, in terms of kind of just what's unfolding in one's life, one can create a certain level of peace or happiness of that. But how about, more active kind of life where you're wanting to seek something in one's life that one thinks will give it a greater meaning, or happiness, or joy, or beauty, how about that more active thing, and, how does one go about that and still have peace and serenity and happiness and all that? Like everything else, when you look deeply at these matters, they're not as simple as they appear, okay? There are many different ways and levels to practice Dharma on, many different kinds of practices. One practice, like you're saying, is very much where you're very clear that certain ways of thinking or perceiving just create emotional affliction, and other ones don't, right? And you kind of consciously, move from one to the other, right? You're kind of trying to we could say you are creating a nice place on your island by clearly not cultivating plants that you call weeds, and cultivating plants that you call flowers, right? And that's certainly, I mean, to me, that is kind of a conscious and an active way of maintaining one's island, right? So, and that's certainly well within the Buddha Dharma to do that. Again, in terms of islands as they are, one can also be less intentional. And one could be on an island in which there are a good amount of flowers and there are a good amount of weeds. And in that case, one would have to develop a more all-embracing acceptance of the weeds in life, and just not to let them upset us. You know, which is again saying all these kind of things that upset me. maybe they're only upsetting me because I am relating to them as if they shouldn't be in my garden, and I may want to cultivate a more embracing acceptance of the so-called weeds or people or situation, so I'm not upset. But what you're saying is also another alternative. I mean, these are just ways. I mean, of doing it. I mean, the way you're doing it is called in Buddhism sort of providing the antidote. You know, this kind of affliction, I'm giving it the antidote and taking the antidote, and immediately I feel better, right? Or else one can do this other kind of practice, which is more understanding, accepting of the weeds, and just not grasping or being attached. But I want to deal with what you really were asking, which is, I get a sense, I want my island to be done in French provincial. And I mean, you know what I mean? I think this island would look, I would just be much happier here, right? If the whole thing was done, I don't want to just deal with it kind of the way it is. I really want a whole new look, right? And I think, I'll be happier, people, the visitors will be happier, right? And is that okay? this is why the looking deeply is so important. Because first of all, we do our kitchens a lot, don't we? You know? And we remodel and we update and, we do a lot of that in lots of areas of our life, don't we? And I think it is an interesting question to ask oneself is, where is this desire coming from, right? Rather than just going with it, because sometimes our desire for something new is part of our just trying to keep things going outside. I'm not saying it has to be, I'm saying that, but it could be, right? And that there are lots of people who live their life, they're always having projects, they're always redoing, they're always remodeling, And then once they're done remodeling, they sell their house and start all over again, another one. There are people like that, right? They're always, if that's your business or something. But some people, it just becomes just something they do to keep themselves occupied, keep themselves busy, feel like you're getting somewhere. The question for me always is, the first question is, am I content on my island of self? Am I satisfied with things just the way they are? Because if I'd say no, it's a lonely place, it's an unhappy place, it's a dry place, then maybe the reason I'm going out is because I think I can get you know, get it out there. When it's really only the qualities that Dharma brings us, or practice, or spiritual life, or whatever brings us, that really create that situation for ourselves. But let's say one goes, no, I mean, I'm content, I'm happy, you know, I just think, you know, redoing the house in this new, you know, it will be nice, right? So then the question becomes, well, then can I go about it in an easy way, right? You know what I mean? Where there's ease. I'm not attached. I mean, a lot of people go about these projects with great intensity, with great attachment, and with great, very attached to outcome, right? So it just becomes another source of constriction and at ease and potentially dissatisfaction to us. So again, up to me is, you know, which is another way of saying, you know, can I live my life, right? Let's say it's an active life where I'm doing, I'm creating, you know, and enjoying that kind of thing. But again, do it without a grasping, right? Without needing it to turn out the way I want it to. You know what I'm saying? In other words, it's almost like we could say, can I live this adult life? You know, which is, has projects and responsibilities and doings, but with some sense of play, right? You know, if you remember building blocks, right? At a certain point, they would what? Fall down. And you'd have a moment of disappointment, and then what? And then you'd start, pick up the blocks and start over again, right? Maybe there were some people here who threw temper tantrums at that point. Those people may still be throwing temper tantrums. Some of these patterns are old in us, we look back. But, you know, most, I would say, children, they have their moment of frustration or disappointment, but then they, you know, they get right back to the blocks. They, you know, there's something nice in that, in the best aspect of children's play, right? They can be very involved, children, you know, very involved in what they're doing, and yet it's a play to them. Right? Something else happens, and they can just walk away from it. So, again, when we're going about the world seeking, right, to fulfill inner needs, there's a great potential for suffering, for dissatisfaction, right? Because we really, we were going outside to get something for the inside, right? You know, but if you can go about your you're looking or you're beautifying or whatever, right? With a much more relaxed, you know. I mean, I think it's better to live life more like a with more sort of like hypothesis versus truth, you know. Yeah, like, yeah, I'm doing this because I think this will, right, be nice to do, or, you know, I think this will, you know, make a difference, or, you know. But it may not be true, right? And so therefore, one doesn't get disappointed or frustrated if things don't go quite exactly the way we want, or turn out the way we want, right? And that's, you know, that's with a job, that's with our life, that's with a relationship, that's with having a child, you know. Right? It'd be nice if it turned out this way, but it may not turn out that way, right? You know, so we see our expectations as simply self-created hypotheses about life. And I think that just will make things easier. So again, you know, I mean, you know, could one, you know, live in a little house by the river and, you know, just tend your little garden, and, you know what I mean, and just kind of live that kind of desireless life, right? You know, one could, right? Could be a very nice life. It's kind of that idyllic kind of life of the... you know, the simple life, the Zen master, whatever, you know, the Taoist poet, and like that. And there are people who live that life, right? And if that's the life we want to live, that's good. But if it's, again, if our life is more engaged, more active, right, involved with the world in a more active way, where you know, there are more things to do or more things to get, and I think some of us live in that world. And the question is, can we live in that world without being controlled by it? Can we live freely in that world, right? Without attachment, without aversion, seeing the empty nature of things, not living from a point of ego grasping, right? And therefore, you know, that wisdom you were saying, you finally said about, you know, the serenity prayer. I think when there's not a lot of self involved, right? When there's not a lot of ego involved, not a lot of control, manipulation, expectation involved, it's much easier to just see the situation and to go, it's obviously not workable, right? I'll just let go. But if there's a lot of ego involvement, right, it's hard to have that wisdom. So again, I think living one's life from a more non-self place will make it just easier to be more at ease in life. Your question was, what would the Buddha say on that? And I just rambled on. You know, so forgive me, forgive the Buddha wherever he is. I wasn't speaking in his name. He may or may not agree. Any other, yes?
I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear it. I'm on my island, but there's a storm coming,
mm-hmm.
and my boat is broken, and I'm tired, and I can't fix the boat, and I can't save myself. What do I do?
Sounds like a koan.
I mean, I can't do it by myself.
Well, no, hold on. There was a koan about a man is hanging. What is it? A man is hanging from a cliff. There's a bunch of them, but one, he's hanging the cliff by his mouth. He's a Zen master, and he's hanging from the cliff on a vine just by his teeth. And someone comes along and says to him, Master, tell me, what is the highest truth of Buddhism? That's a koan that one has to answer. Right? I think there's another one like that where he's hanging by the cliff from one hand and he sees a flower,
strawberry
and... like that. So let me get this. So someone is on an island, they got a broken boat, storm is coming. What do you do?
Well, I'm tired. I can't fix it. I can't handle it.
Yeah, well.
I can't save myself.
Yeah, so what's the big deal?
I want to live.
There's your problem. You're attached to life. Well, then you should have gotten that boat fixed a long time ago. She wants another answer. Well, see, that's what we do. We want the answer that fits with us, that makes us comfortable. You know, and I think, Ruth, I think you're probably asking something else, but for some reason this were, we went with the question, you know, if you're on an island and there's no way off and the hurricane is coming, what do? I mean, what do you do? You just, you know,
protect yourself as well as you can.
Maybe, or let's say there's no protection. You know, the water's going to wash over you. You know, that's the one about the strawberry. Even, you know, 10 seconds away from death, right? In that moment, that strawberry was wonderful to eat. If we always live with afraid, with fear, what's going to happen next? You know, it's like a Zen master said. You know, it's simple. He said that when asked about death, he said, "Don't ask me questions about death." He said, "You know, I live my life." He says, "You know, in life, identify with life; at death, identify with death." Do you know what's going to happen to you when you die? Be curious when you get there. Be curious. Be open. Be present. It may not be what you think it is. Just another moment that we can be totally present to, open, relaxed, curious. So, sometimes we run around asking for help because we're unwilling just to stay and to experience what is happening. It may not be as bad as we think it is. So again, any other questions about how to live this teaching?
I don't know if this is where Ruth is coming from, but I've experienced an island where I feel weak and fragile and tired and disempowered, and I could just sit with that feeling. But my tendency is to go, help! You know, if there's a God, a higher power, higher wisdom, the moon, something that is outside of which feels like this disempowered self.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah, yeah.
So you say, I feel what? I feel
weak, tired, confused.
Okay. Those are words to describe something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And if I said to you, What actually are you experiencing?
Well, I know what the physical sensation is.
It's
dull, heavy.
I'm feeling dull and heavy.
Confused, cloudy, dark.
Well, confused, what is it? I mean, it sounds like you're saying dark, heavy. That doesn't sound confused. You're describing kind of accurately what you're experiencing. It doesn't sound confused. I mean, you sound like you're very, when you stop and you look, you're very clear what you're experiencing. So you're experiencing heaviness in your heart, in your chest, right? Not a lot of energy, not a lot of interest. Yeah. Okay. So you're clear. Okay. So that is a storm that is coming through you in this moment. Right. Yeah. As feeling sensations within you, we use mindfulness, holding those sensations, awareness of them, and we are tender with them. we tend them. We don't need to create a story around them, which is where the mind goes, right? Even like disempowered, and you know what I mean, and confusion, these are now words that you know, the thinking mind is putting on to an experience, which is, right? And so I wouldn't go there, because often that time, those kind of words just compound the problem. They take us further away. So we have feelings in our body, and with mindfulness, with understanding, with compassion, we take care of them. But then the Buddha says, if you define what you're experiencing as suffering, I am suffering, right? Then the Buddha says, well, look deeply, what is causing you to suffer? That's the only place to go, right? In the Buddhist path. Right? Again, you know, you could, when you talk, you know, up there, ask for help. Those are other paths. That's all. I mean, I'm not making any judgment about that. But I'm saying, you know, I teach in the Buddhist tradition. So then that's a tradition I know. That's how I practice. So I would say, once we have held something in mindfulness, in awareness, in tenderness, right? We then look deeply. What is the cause? The origin that have caused these feelings to arouse in me, right? They are arising in me, right? They're not arising from outside of you. You understand? They're arising in me. Okay, so you understand that. So the question is to understand the cause, right? And we might go, well, it's because he did this or that one did that, or but then we go, well, that's outside. But what's inside me? What shifted inside me that caused me to go from a, I don't know, happy, calm person to, you know, something caused it to happen, and it happened in me. And then it starts getting sort of a little deep and profound, because we're dealing with self, we're dealing with attachments, we're dealing with expectations. You know what I mean? We're dealing really with sort of the building blocks of ego, of self, of just how we construct our ego world. And, you know, looking that way rather than that way, again, not only gives you the opportunity of, you know, freeing yourself from your current distress, but really seeing that, you know, this is not the first time. You know, the emotional experience or the intensity may be unique, but the way we kind of deal with things is a theme. And so there's, you know, this is why it is said that, you know, that when we are in extremities of intensities of afflictive emotions, if we can stop and then look deeply, we have the opportunity of liberating ourselves. Because most of the time when things are going well, these things are more subtle. They're there. I was saying yesterday in one of the groups, you know, it's like coals that are like embers, you know what I mean? You look at them, they're white and ashen, right? But it doesn't take too much blowing to all of a sudden you realize there's still fire there. And that is, if we're honest with ourselves, we realize, you know, they have been there in my storehouse consciousness, right? And and now they've gotten blown upon big time, and I can feel the fire. The fire is up. Okay, and so this is a wonderful opportunity, if you can practice in this way, to really heal and transform. Okay, but it's a deep work. It's a capacity to be very present and to stay with it, and to really look, you know, do that deep looking work. So we need to stop. Okay. Well.
And just following up on what was just said, you talk about the deep embers. There's a certain amount of genetic phenomena we're talking about. Human beings are social animals. And like any other creature, there are certain desires to be sociable and social and with people and have relationships of various kinds. So when you say, look deeply and see what's there, if you go all the way down, you're talking about a genetic phenomena that says people want to be together. So what do you do with that?
I think, I don't want to get into a philosophical discussion, but I think Buddhism is just about that. You could say deep down inside, violence, wanting to kill, domination, you can make lots of cases, that we're genetically primed for this stuff if you go down deep, right? Well, I think the whole course of civilization, religion, spirituality is learning how to deal with these, whatever you want to call them, right? Today we call them genetic impulses because this is kind of the science of today, right? But, I mean, these impulses have always been known, right? And they need, we have the impulse, let's say, for human beings, right? So we have a natural socialization, right? Seems to be part of what it means to be human, right? Just like the ducks out there. If you've been watching the ducks go around. Yeah. Again, there is that impulse, right? And yet ego and self and its needs takes that impulses and takes it in all kinds of ways that we end up taking this very pure impulse and turn it into a source of suffering. So Buddhism doesn't say, do not love, do not have relationships, right? But it says, watch out that you don't turn something that has the potential to be very productive of happiness and well-being for you and another person into a source of suffering, right? That's what it says. And the suffering is not about the impulse for socialization or relationship. It's how ego fastens on that and uses it for its own, right? That's where it gets screwed up. Is that clear? So, anyhow. Anyhow, to be continued. So again, it is quarter after, and we have to close. So let us. I guess I will not read from the Sixth Patriarch, but at some point in the future, we will explore his. Formless precepts and formless refuges.